Let's make it happen, Captain!
Now, from deep inside Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. So this is the first show post-Christmas. So we want to talk about, you got a new machine for Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate.
Maybe you bought the machine yourself.
Maybe you just like took advantage of, you know, Black Friday sales and you went out and bought some machine. But now you've got a new PC from the holidays, and how do you set it up? And so that's the subject of today's show.
It's a very complex subject. Many people have talked about it in the past.
This is a show where we're already an hour and a half into this, and we haven't even started the cameras yet, so we've been talking about this all morning. So let's get started. You get a new machine. Let's say it's a laptop. We were talking about, you know, build your own. It's all laptops anymore. So you get your laptop, crack open the lid. What's the first thing you do, Gov?
Well, you've bought a laptop. It's come from an OEM, HP, Dell, Lenovo, whatever. You know, first thing that always happens, because it's an OEM machine, you have to plug in your user information. We run through what we call the UBI setup, out of the box experience. And so, you know, you get past all of that wonderful goodness, and you're staring at this blank desktop with a whole bunch of icons, and you're perhaps waiting for an additional 5 minutes while the, you know, icons start popping up in your notification area here of all the various software that happens to come pre-installed on your OEM machine.
Yeah.
Now, I have stared at OEM machines of both machines that I have bought and of friends and family, things that have come in through my workbench over the years of, why is my computer so slow? Why is this happening? Why is it so unstable? Damn Windows, damn Microsoft.
It curses.
We would all like to think that when we buy a machine, it's pristine, it's clean, it's the best that it can possibly be. No, in fact, it's probably at its worst that it could ever be is when you first purchase a machine. Why? Because as part of, you know, the very small margins that OEMs have when they're producing their machines, they get paid for putting on other people's software.
Yeah.
Every time, you know, you see some other icon on the desktop, that is money going to the OEMs because they've put it on there.
Mm-hmm. They've sold real estate. In your property.
Exactly. They have sold, the ad space. It's why you'll notice that a lot of the software that comes on the machine isn't actually full-price software. It's trialware.
Yeah.
Right? In the hopes that that you will actually go purchase the full version of whatever piece of software might be installed on that machine. So the first thing that I like to do is clean the machine. And that has a lot of different methods, you know, depending on the age of the machine, depending on exactly how bad it looks when I first look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just kind of...
This is a process I call deboning the PC.
Deboning it.
So this is like pulling the bones out of fish. This is, and you know, this is one of the things that we were talking about before. It's like when you first start up your machine, right? One of the binary things that you have to get over is, okay, am I going to try to salvage this and uninstall stuff and end up with like hanging chads of things that are in directories I don't even think about right now, or do I just flatten it?
Flattening does sound very appealing to a lot of users. Except for when you take this particular thought into account. When you buy an OEM machine, it isn't like they just took the Windows install CD, installed it.
There's not a Windows box in the laptop box.
No.
If you're lucky, you've got an image. You're back to where you were before.
Well, that and just how the OEM has prepared the machine, it's not as simple as they took the CD, they installed it, and then installed software on top.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. You know, there is an entire imaging process, and of that process, it's not necessarily, you know, a person in there that is actually installing software.
Yeah.
They can have configuration scripts. They can have additional OEM very specific tweaks and hot fixes that we've produced for OEMs that are slipstreamed into the image to make it, you know, work on that particular model or that particular line of models for that OEM.
And so that might be in jeopardy if you flatten your machine to begin with.
Absolutely. So even if you've bought, you know, you went out to the store, you've gone to MSDN, and you have an install version of Windows, really think to yourself, can I get it back to a state that is that I know is going to be fully functional?
Yeah.
With taking advantage of all of the actual hardware and, you know, doohickeys and doodads that might have come with the machine. So on the newer machines, the newer laptops, more complex machines, I don't tend to do a wipe and load unless I absolutely have to.
Yeah.
What I do is remove all of the, or most of the software that I know I will never touch, I will never purchase, it's just going to get in the way.
Yeah.
And because of the way that modern software works, it isn't as simple as, oh, it's one single application, right? It's mm-hmm. not just a, you double-click on the icon, the application starts, it's there, you close it, and it's no longer working anymore. That isn't how software works anymore. When you install an application, or with much of the applications that come with OEM machines, it comes with services, it comes with drivers, it comes with other updaters, it comes with bundled with other toolbars and things that are so intertwined with each other that it's not as simple as saying, oh, it's just an application.
Yeah.
So you have this giant rat's nest of applications installed on your machine.
Yeah.
That you want to tease apart, but in such a way that you actually get the right bits off the machine while leaving the bits that you want on.
Mm-hmm.
So things that are like related to your webcam, you might actually want to play with the webcam. I know that there's a piece of software that comes on HP machines, UCam, you know, kind of useful in a lot of ways, but really it depends on how you're going to use it. If you're just going to use it for Skype, guess what? You probably don't need any of the webcam software on there. Skype is going to have it, is going to interact with the webcam built in.
But it might have something in there that you want to play around with sometime, like, I don't know, some webcam software might have, like, you know, being able to stop motion.
Sure,
stuff
exactly. Very, very specific
for a
photo booth
application or something like that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hurt to keep some stuff on there like that, too.
Absolutely. But some of the stuff that I would pull off is like the trialware antivirus software, system mm-hmm. protection utilities that they put on.
Yeah.
Now, there's two methods of removing that type of software. You can attempt to uninstall it through add-remove programs. But more often than not, the antivirus software that comes like as trialware on OEM machines, you really do have to go to their specific website and pick up their uninstaller. Because mm-hmm. I've had this happen to me in the past where even using the add remove program's uninstaller does not fully remove the software. It leaves the machine in a, kind of a funky state.
Yeah.
But the standalone uninstaller that you can download from the particular ISV's website usually really does the trick.
Yeah.
A lot of folks will say, you know, can I just use this generic uninstall utility? It's this, you know, supposedly goes and it cleans up the registry and it cleans up files. No, stay away from it. Don't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen those types of generic uninstall utilities actually cause far more harm to a machine than they're ever worth.
Yeah.
It's much, much better to actually go to the vendor's website, find the uninstaller. If the one in add remove programs doesn't actually clean it up completely,
yeah,
go find the actual uninstaller to remove the software completely.
What would tip you off to whether add remove programs actually did what you were hoping it would do?
Well, I would hope to see that the notification area icons, if any were present to begin with, are actually gone.
Yeah.
Start menu shortcuts would be gone. The entry and add remove programs would be removed, and then I'd do a spot check of the registry.
Mm-hmm.
See, you know, did all of those entries get removed?
Yeah.
And
the folder and, like, program
folder,
files?
That would be a big tip-off.
Hopefully
that'd
be gone.
Yeah, because for things like AV software, there's services that are related to it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those are stored in the program files directory.
Yeah.
So if that whole directory is gone, you're pretty certain that that the remnants are gone. And if it does actually happen to leave a, you know, errand registry key here or there, probably won't cause much harm.
Yeah.
But I would, the way that I remove software from a machine, and yes, it's pretty time consuming, is to uninstall the software, reboot the machine, go to the next piece, uninstall it, reboot the machine. Yes, it's very time consuming, it's annoying, I totally get that, but a lot of software will be kept running until the machine reboots when it can actually delete files.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going through multiple uninstalls,
yeah.
What can happen is the previous uninstaller can, how it sets up the information to remove its files on reboot,
yeah,
can get stomped on by another uninstaller.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've run an uninstall and that uninstall has told the machine, please remove these registries and files, but it can only do so on the next reboot.
Yeah.
Then another uninstaller comes along and it does the same thing. Oh, but guess what? The location in which that it says to wait till the next reboot, they're the same location. And
yeah,
if you have a bad uninstaller, it can stomp on those keys.
So it sucked the oxygen out of the room for the other uninstaller.
Exactly. And now you're left in this weird half uninstalled state where the files are still kept around, but most of it's gone.
Yeah.
Those are really bad for like shell extensions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of software will get set up so that it runs in proc with Explorer, and it won't properly be removed until Explorer is restarted, and that typically happens with a machine reboot.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I do uninstalls, mm-hmm. and thankfully it's only, you know, a pain for about 45 minutes to an hour, and then after that,
well,
I don't have to worry about it.
The other thing too, thankfully, it seems like in recent times there's less of this stuff on machines.
Absolutely.
I remember back in the day, it used to be a pretty big problem when you had machines that just had a lot of things on the desktop. But now if you go buy a laptop at like a Microsoft store, mm-hmm. in the mall, they don't come. I think there's some kind of requirement where they don't allow. They're clean machines,
yeah,
for the most part.
They come with an extremely small set of pre-installed software.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what the requirements are in there, but I know this is, you won't find a machine that has 50 icons on the desktop that,
right.
you know, this preloaded crap in a Microsoft store. Okay, so what other things do you do?
So I've gone through the uninstalling of AV. At that point, once the AV software is uninstalled, then I would go and install Security Essentials.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft Security Essentials.
Yep.
And then at that point, I would stop and then go to Windows Update and then start sucking down any additional updates that have to come on the machine, doing the reboots. I like to segment what I'm doing in steps.
Yeah.
So I've removed crap. I've put on Security Essentials so that I'm now in a protected state.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm updating my machine to get all the latest updates. And now my next phase is to install software that I care about.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And one of the first things that I do is, of course, Security Essentials and Windows Live Essentials.
Absolutely.
One of the best parts about Windows Live Essentials is Live Mesh for syncing stuff across multiple machines.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy way if you're going from an older PC to your new PC to actually get some of your files and settings from that old PC running on your new one.
Yeah.
It's better, you know, if both machines were running Windows 7. It's definitely a lot tougher if, you know, one of them was running XP or Vista and the latest one is Win 7. You might not actually want to carry a lot of those old settings. Your files, they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
That part doesn't matter. But being able to sync your favorites across multiple machines, that's one of the great things about Live Mesh.
Yeah. Awesome. So while the Windows updates are going, one of the things that I tend to do on my machines is I first check the root directory of the hard drive,
mm-hmm.
and I clean up whatever I can in there because I'm just a maniac when it comes to having clean everything. So like I think my home machine, I'm probably more anal about this on my home machine than any others, but like I have like five directories here, and
mm-hmm.
that's it.
So I'm actually showing all directories here. So to a regular user, you would only ever see that.
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you this is an extra directory, this is an extra directory,
yep.
this is an extra directory, this is an extra directory, this is an extra directory, and this is an extra directory.
And all directories I would get rid of.
Yep.
That's right off the start.
Yeah, my x86 and AMD64 directories are my debuggers.
Yeah.
So they always sit at the root of the drive because I don't like to type. And
you're all in the command line.
I'm in the command line,
yeah.
And I particularly set up my machines for this type of setup.
That's one of the other things that I do, too, though, is I go into Windows Explorer and I turn on Show Me the Extensions.
Because
I have to see extensions. That's important for a lot of the stuff that I do. So I'll set those, and I like to see, you know, the hidden files and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, and I mean, as you can tell, so do I.
Yeah.
So
I do exactly this. I don't do protected operating system files because I don't really need it, but I could see how you would.
Yeah, I mean, the protected operating system files are really...
What kind of files are they talking about there?
So everything in Windows System 32.
Okay.
Root files at the, you know, the hyperfile, the page file,
mm-hmm.
bootloader, things that are marked as system, because most users will never have to see it. I usually have to play around with those files.
Yeah.
So I like to see it
so
when
next
I have
thing,
to use Explorer.
The next thing that I do, while the Windows updates are loading, mm-hmm. is I like to sort my start menu.
Because oh, yeah.
I'm very particular about, I like to have a very clean start menu that's sorted into different directories. So,
as you can tell, I do not. I
yeah,
leave my start menu.
It's just, you know, people work different ways. So the way that I do this is I make some, like, top-level directories, and mm-hmm. I sort everything into that, just drag these folders as they are in the start menu into those. So, like, on mine, I have, I'll tell you what those are.
But you don't do it through this interface, do you?
I'll show you how to do it. So I'll have, I have games, of course. I've got internet, which covers everything from, like, you know, Flash to browsers, everything in there. I have office utils, which are basically anything I would use for business, like the office suite and stuff like that. Photo utils, which is anything related to still pictures. Video utils, which is anything related to video utilities. Social, and then sound utils, stuff like, you know, I don't know, it used to be Cool Edit, but now it's like, and then it was Audition. I forget what they call it now. Adobe, whatever the Adobe sound thing is. Here, I can just click on this and tell you. Sound booth. So, yeah, sound utilities, and then I just have a general utils, which is like, you know, just maintenance stuff, you know, administrator tools. And so the way that I do this is if you click on start, because it's hard to, you know, for the average person to remember where does this start menu mm-hmm. Folders exist. And they're in two different places.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all users and you have your users.
Yep.
So the best way to do this is I just click start and I go to the all programs
right-click.
And then just right click and
yep.
go, you know, open.
That's exactly what I did here. And
yeah.
It takes you to your start menu and your programs.
And so you just start sorting in here. You clean it up through here. You know, be kind of careful in what you're doing here. And then when you finish and you hit start again, you'll see, oh, I just cleaned this up and it was clean. And now there's still other ones that are in there. Right click on one of those, do open, and it'll take you to that second directory, which you'll be, depend on which one you were in originally.
Right.
And you can start sorting again in there and just drag them into your other one. So that's the other thing that I do. And I end up with, like, you know, 6-7 directories in my start menu, and it's very clean. It makes me feel like I'm a clean digital user. I know. So then next step after that, what do I do? Let's see. I remove a lot of the add-ins in IE. That's a next step.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start installing software.
Hopefully, though, with your with the removals of add-ins of IE, if you've already uninstalled the software
yeah.
in the first step, you hopefully shouldn't have to remove a lot.
Yeah. Not a lot, but I mean, there's always going to be something there.
Yeah.
Do I really need the Groove thing? Probably not. Yeah, you know, it depends. But it's different for everyone, too, so this is where you have to figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
So installing software, Windows Live Essentials, of course. Anything off the top of your mind beyond that you do?
I've attempted to not install Office.
So this is one of the things we talked about is I tend to install a lot of different stuff on a new machine. You probably flatten a lot more machines than the typical person, so I could see how you
I don't like to install a lot of software on my computers, especially, you know, if I can use a built-in one,
mm-hmm.
I will. Like, on my dev box at work, for example, you know, I have a fair amount of software because it's all very highly specialized software.
Yeah.
Right? But if I'm editing a text document, do I care if I'm using Notepad++, Ultra Edit, or do I just do it in Notepad?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's usually, I don't use enough of the extra super duper features on a wide variety of machines. I'll use extra super duper features on a particular machine.
Yeah.
So I will tend to, you know, if I'm getting a new computer or if I'm setting up new computers, I will, you know, segregate what I will have on machines, and I'll try to despecialize a machine as much as I can.
Yeah.
Store a lot of stuff on a server, you know, and I will just remote desktop into that machine when I want to do, you know, highly specialized work, as opposed to saying, oh, I want to put Notepad++ on all of my machines.
Yeah.
Do I really want to do that? No, I don't really want to do that. I want to have all of my software on all of my machines all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
If I just have to install it once, then I only have to worry about updating it once.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just remote desktop. I love remote desktop.
Yeah.
All of my machines run Ultimate just for the remote desktop feature.
Mm-hmm.
Because I use that one heavily. I don't like to have to install a lot of software, because if I lose a machine, it's like, eh, it's not really a big deal to me.
Yeah.
I consider my machine as dumb clients more than anything else. I'll have, you know, a machine with a lot of horsepower for doing video edits, for doing, you know, file compression, for gaming, or I don't do a lot of gaming, but, you know, for a machine that I would like to game with.
Yeah.
That one has the horsepower, and, you know, I will either TS into it for, you know, for the specialized work, or I'll actually be physically at that machine if I wanted to game.
Yeah.
So no, I don't install a lot of software on machines as much as I can. I like to use whatever is built in. If I can't use whatever is built in, of course, I will add extra utilities. Like, I know you were talking about using WinRAR.
Yeah, I install WinRAR. It's just one of the things that I do. It's been habit for so many years that...
I know, and everybody has their own particular preference. I kind of float between iZark, 7-Zip, and TugZip for my file decompression needs.
Yeah.
I like 7-Zip because it'll also open up ISOs, no problem.
Yeah. Well, see, all right, so here's the other things I install. I install VLC mm-hmm. because...
You're dealing with video files.
Yeah, if you work in video, that installing VLC will save you so many issues that And, you know, the other thing, too, we were talking about, the VLC folks did a Reddit Ask Me Anything,
mm-hmm.
which is incredibly interesting to read because they're doing a lot of things to play these videos that, like in Microsoft, we can't do it.
Right.
We can't include codecs for weird video file formats that VLC just, oh, I don't care, we'll make anything work. So,
well, I know I'll use VLC probably similar to what you would do, but I use it as a smoke test, like... Is the file even good?
Yeah.
Right? Like, if nothing can play it,
yeah,
and VLC can play it, it usually means that the file itself is good, but it's non-compliant in some
if
way,
VLC
shape, or form.
Won't play it, you probably just have a bad file.
Exactly.
I've never seen it where, you know, you couldn't play it in VLC and you have anything good there.
Mm-hmm.
And VLC is very... I mean, this is one of the things that you got to give them credit for. They're very good about... I have a really hosed file that's, like, cut off in the middle, it's corrupt in the beginning, and stuff like that. VLC will still usually play that without mm-hmm. a problem. It'll tell you in the beginning, you know, it's a bad file, but you just click, yeah, don't worry about
it. Here there be dragons.
Yeah. And then in addition to VLC, because I'm working with video, I install KC Video Inspector, which we were talking about this. This is another one where KC Video Inspector, I can right-click on any kind of video that I have that's giving me a problem, and I can go to KC Video Inspector. It pops up a thing that tells me for the video and the audio, mm-hmm. do you have the codec to play this? And if you don't, there's a button there that'll take you to where to get the right codec for it, which is very helpful.
Although I do remember this problem being a lot worse in the XP days.
Yeah.
You know, like nowadays with Win 7, thankfully, it actually does include a lot of codecs, a lot of the most commonly used codecs anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice that we actually have built-in MP4 support.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that is incredibly useful.
And what was the one like that you mentioned that you use?
G-Spot? G-Spot.
Never heard of it before, but...
It's been around a really, 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 really long time, and, you know, if anyone wants to go search for it, you can tell by the UI that it's been around for a very, very long time. But yeah, it tells by reading the file itself, you know, what is the type of codec that it should be using.
Yeah.
What the codecs you have installed on your system.
When we looked at earlier, you brought up the UI, and I was like, yeah, it looks like something Go would use.
That doesn't surprise me at all. It's chock full of highly technical information.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a, you know, typical end user, home user kind of utility.
Yeah.
One thing that, you know, I install talking about utilities are the debuggers, the Windows debuggers.
Yeah.
You know, if you're ever looking at crash dumps, you know, if you ever want to look at what your machine is doing, it's kind of fun. You know, just go download the SDK. You don't have to download the entire SDK. You can just choose the debugger portion of it, point it to our public Windows symbols. It's really interesting to take a look at what kinds of things are happening on your system. And it's like, hey, Explorer crashes every time I right-click on a file. Well, you can actually look at that dump and say, eh, it's probably a bad shell extension.
Yeah.
But you can start deciphering these kinds of issues yourself, as opposed to just saying, oh, it crashed, and you're kind of like left in the dark of what's going on.
Yeah.
You just kind of avoid doing what it is that you were doing. Or you go and flatten your machine, and then, you know, a couple of months later, because, hey, you had to have that one particular utility, and you don't frequently use it, but when you do, or some side effect of it causes your machine to crash.
Yeah.
You know, you can actually start finding those issues out, and maybe you don't use that utility, or you don't use that piece of software anymore, and you try something else.
Cool. So the next thing that I install is a virtual clone drive from Slysoft, because it'll map your ISOs as a drive, and I really like that. It looks like Microsoft's embracing ISO even more as time goes along, so glad to see that. But I install Virtual Clone Drive. It's free, and it'll just map your ISOs as a drive. I install Fences from Stardock, which is a utility that'll manage the desktop icons on your machine. And the main reason I do this, I do like to make fences. You know, you right-click, drag around a group of icons, and let you group those together, and it makes kind of a prettier UI than you normally have with, like, folders on your desktop. So it kind of, like, segments all your desktop icons. I really like that. But the main reason I use fences is because I can just double-click on the desktop, and it hides all the icons. Double-click on the desktop, and they all come back. And that one feature alone is, like, I have to have that. I expect it on all the machines that I'm on now. So I install that. And then the last main one that I always install is the Brain, which is... I don't even know how to explain the Brain. I've been using it for like 15 years now, and I can't live without it. But if you play the video here, you could see how did you describe it? It was like
I want to hear your description first, and no. Then my summary of your description.
Okay, so it's like part CMS, part connecting dots between disparate things that. You need to have relations with. And it's a place to store files. It's just a place to make sense of how things are connected. And I use it for a lot of different things. I have a lot of different brains at home. But you can see here, you know, you can make connections between things. You can pivot between them.
So this is like organizing your life?
Yeah. So it's kind of like, well... organizing your life. I mean, like, I have one, like, if we do, like, the Azure live event that we do, I'll make a brain for that to connect. Here's who's handling the live streaming. Here's who's handling the set creation. Who's doing this? And then when I go there, I see how they're all connected, and I can pivot between them, and I have documents attached to each of those. And so it helps me keep track of how all those different things are connected and where information is. It's gotten to where search has gotten so much better that this isn't as important to me as it used to be, but it's still, for finding information and finding documents and stuff, it's hard to beat this for speed.
It looks like it has a pretty decent, you know, higher level view that you might not actually get from a simple search.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you can search for something, you already know it.
Yeah.
But what if you don't exactly know it?
Yeah.
How do you search for it? But you can search for a related item that you actually do remember and then find all of its threads.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is when we did the rebuild of the studio and we expanded, I was like, well, I know we used this lighting guy a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I was able, well, I just go to the studio brain. I go to, you know, here's the lighting section. And it's connected to all these other people. And there's the guy that I was looking for. And I don't know how I would find that information out without doing a very extensive, probably like an Outlook search or something to try to find where it was.
And anyone who's ever tried to do an Outlook search... Yeah.
Yeah, it can be challenging. And so this is one of the places where it's like, you know, this has just saved a lot of time. So I tend to install that. And I actually have a text document that I keep on my thumb drive called Reformat Reinstall, and it's just a list of all the applications that I... And I have, like, here's a short list that I just install, right, and here's the other stuff that, if, like, it's my main machine that I'll probably end up installing over time. And it just gives me a way to know, nah, this is what I typically use, and then I don't have to try to guess which apps I need to reinstall.
I bet you have that document linked into your brain somewhere.
It is. It's in my brain. It's in my crazy important stuff section.
So I look at this as 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon meets Hansel and Gretel.
Yes, yes. A lot of breadcrumbs and a lot of connectedness. So, yeah, very interesting. And they have a patent on this kind of display, which is interesting, too. So, yeah.
It looks highly intuitive.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to drill in, drill out, have a very simplified and a complex view of all of the various connections that you have. And what's really nice is that, you know, connections, like memories, tend to fade.
Yeah.
But with this kind of software, you know, you can always find it again. You don't actually have to forget about anything anymore. You can just document it and say, it might be useful, it might not be useful. Maybe you go look at it a couple of years later. It's like, yeah, this connection never had a connection to anything else. Maybe it doesn't need to be there anymore.
Yeah. Awesome. So, all right, so now we've gotten to the point where we've probably installed all the software we're going to install. Let's talk about backups. What's your backup process like?
My backup process is interesting, to say the least. So
yeah.
I have at least two different forms of data. I have short-term, highly volatile information, things that are changing constantly,
mm-hmm.
and then I have long-term storage of something that will never change. Like if I buy a CD and I rip the CD, right?
Yeah.
That is never going to change. I've ripped it, I'm done. That goes into immediate long-term storage. Long-term storage, I don't have to continually re-back up,
mm-hmm.
right? Once it's backed up, it's done.
Yeah.
My short-term storage, my documents, anything that I'm actively editing, pictures that I'm taking off my camera, they all get dumped into this kind of a first-in, first-out scratch location, right? And it's a small location. It's not overly huge. Things don't live in my scratch location for a long period of time.
Yeah.
It's strictly... oh, it's here, now I'm going to do like some edits on it, and then it becomes immediate long-term storage.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, it moves out of the scratch location. But when it's in the scratch location, I do significantly faster backups on it.
Yeah.
I will also have this location synced to SkyDrive and Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so ultimate catastrophe happens. I know that, hey, I've dumped my pictures... and, you know, it's at a minimum of about 5 gigs worth at any given time.
Yeah.
It's going to be synced up. So all I have to do is run out of the house with my backup drives, my long-term storage backup drives, and I'm cool.
Yeah.
Everything else is synced up to the cloud. Now, do I let things live in the cloud? No. Because, again, that's my short-term storage location.
Yeah.
Anything super important, you know, medical information, stuff like that, doesn't exist in the cloud. That exists on thumb drives that are in various
secure locations
that will not be discussed upon.
Yeah.
But the relevant people know where they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I think of backups more as disaster recovery. Do I care about things that can be easily recovered or reconstructed? No, I don't. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not that important to me. Do I really care if I've lost, you know, the Men at Work CD from 1985.
Yeah, and you've got the CD somewhere in the closet.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal to me.
Yeah.
It's on Zune,
yeah.
You know, so if, for music, again, I've kind
and
of gone...
And it's Men at Work. I mean, come on.
I don't know. I mean, it's a good CD.
Yeah.
But, you know, things like that I don't necessarily have a strong sentimental attachment to.
Yeah.
Family pictures. Those things have to live, or else people beyond me get mad.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah.
So that's kind of how I do my backup strategy is scratch location, frequent backups, long term storage doesn't require frequent backups. It's two backups, one stored offsite,
mm-hmm.
And you know, as things get transitioned to long term backup, they get updated, but you know. We're talking at any given time, it takes a good couple of months before something transitions from short-term to long-term.
Yeah.
But in each case, I've got everything backed up.
So I have a very similar strategy to that. The first thing that I do when I get a new PC is I make a directory called mytempstuff, just off of C. And that's my kind of scratch temporary location. Incredibly important directory. So it's a directory that I have backed up to thumb drive, to a BitLocker thumb drive, and to lots of other places. But the mytempstuff, well, in the root of mytempstuff includes stuff like, you know, my to-do list and short-term stuff I got to handle, take care of, lots of little text files, drive management, and stuff like that. And then within there, I've got like a media backup, which is like temporary storage. So if I unload a camera, mm-hmm. I unload it to that directory. I know this is a place where these pictures don't exist anywhere else. You don't want to lose this because you're kind of screwed. And the first thing I do from those, for pictures anyway, is I back those up to a DVD, which goes family's house. Mm-hmm. And then I put it onto hard drive storage. And then I actually have, you know, I did this week, too. It's something that I kind of do annually where I do all my backup stuff because it takes a long time the way I
Most
do it.
Most people do it.
I showed you my spreadsheet. It's a mess. It's a spreadsheet. It doesn't even fit on one screen.
Spring cleaning done
terabytes.
Over Christmas holidays.
Yeah, exactly. Just terabytes and terabytes of stuff. And so anyway, everything goes into that pictures directory. When it gets backed up, it gets moved to a hard drive. Also in that directory is any kind of document that I'm going to need to keep. So like my grandpa's military service records. All this stuff has been scanned. Every document that's important that comes into the house goes into an inbox where it gets scanned, gets put into this stuff, and then I don't care what happens to it after that because I have a digital version that's not taking up space in my physical world. Mm-hmm. The same thing with DVDs and stuff. Everything that comes into the house gets imaged, and then I don't care what my wife does with that stuff. You can throw it away for all I care because I have a digital image. And I'm happy to say that since, I don't know what day it was, but since the day Princess Diana died, that was the last day that I lost bits. I've never lost a single bit of data since then. And that story there is I accidentally touched a hard drive to the frame and lost a hard drive that wasn't backed up. Learned a very important lesson, which has never happened since then. And then I came out of my room and I was so bummed. I was like, oh, I lost that hard drive. I had so much important stuff. And it was like, oh, and Princess Diana just died. That's what a day. So
insult to injury, dude.
Yeah, so that's how I remember. That was the last day that I lost data, and it'll never happen again. So I have three copies. I have the primary copy that lives on the hard drives, and then I back that up, which is what I did this week, and then I back that up to another set of hard drives that goes in a safe, which would probably be better in a safety deposit box, but a safe will work. It's a good safe. So that's my backup strategy, and takes a long time.
Put in your gun safe.
But I don't know what you're talking about. All right, so then let's see. Next up, let's see pick of the week. Let's talk about picks of the week. So we got two of them that we want to talk about today. The first one is Saludo.
Saludo.
So Saludo
I
does...
I have three picks of the week.
Okay.
Well, two and a half. Two and a half picks of the week.
All right. So Saludo is a very interesting application. This is something like, let's say your mother or father or some other family member got a machine, and you know you're going to be doing all the maintenance on this thing because they're incapable of handling it on their own.
Well, and not only that, but they maybe just don't even want to worry about it.
They'd rather you worry about it.
They'd rather me worry about it, exactly.
All right, so you got all the stuff that you're normally going to do to all these machines. Well, you can send your family member an invite from your Saludo account, and it'll add their machine onto your account. And you can see, you know, it crashes because of these applications. It has these updates on it. It needs this stuff applied to it. Mm-hmm. As the management person, you can say, hey, do all the Windows updates and stuff to this machine. And even if they aren't even online, if their machine is turned off, when they turn it back on, it connects, it does all this stuff for you. That alone is pretty cool. I mean, we've got some tools that kind of do that through Microsoft. It's important. I mean, we mentioned Mesh, and there's another one that you were talking about, Intune.
Yeah, there's Windows Intune that does, you know, very much the same thing. This is geared towards small businesses.
Yeah.
You know, things where you might have a a franchise, so yeah. It's not all in one location. It's spread out across multiple locations. I've used that it is unfortunately only available really for Windows Enterprise Edition, so
yeah.
It's really geared towards the small business, not home user. I highly recommend anybody that thinks this is cool, don't send me email because I already know about it. It doesn't help if you send me email. Send the Intune folks mail and comments about getting this for regular consumers. Because
glad you didn't say go right to Ballmer.
No. Well, I'm sure he would just send it to the right folks as well,
yeah.
But you might as well just go to the right folks
His
directly.
His assistant will send it to the right folks.
But yeah, if the public actually, you know, really demands this kind of thing,
yeah.
You guys have the voice in order to get them to at least make, you know, a consumer level version of this.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily make this exact version available to consumers, but
yeah.
I think there's a seriously big demand for, you know, every family member practically has the one go-to person for technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, can you help me recover my files? Who do you go to? You know, little cousin Johnny or whatever
yeah.
is, you know, the tech person.
Yeah.
And you constantly have to do that. So why not just make it easy?
Yeah. In the meantime, you can use Saludo. It's here's one of the things about Saludo. I mean, it's cool enough, all the stuff that they do, which, by the way, you can do a search for How to Geek. They did a pretty extensive review of Saludo and talks about some of the things that they do, which is very interesting. But here's the thing with Saludo. The UI is off the chain. It is incredible. Everything is, like, animated and very clean and streamlined. And, I mean, they've just thought of everything. When you start it up the first time, it, like, peels back the corner of your desktop, and it looks really cool. And when you click the close button, it kind of rotates. And then, I mean, just really have given some attention to UI. And if you're like me and you just love a good UI...
You like eye candy, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I love eye candy. And I don't know who's doing this at Saludo. They really have done a heck of a job just making it look... It's an enjoyable software to use. And it's called the anti-frustration software. And they've embraced that with the UI. So I'm a big fan of it. Now, you might say, hey, I went to Saludo and I can't download it. It's not available. So you can use the code DefragShowSentMe. And they will let you download it, and you can try it before everyone else and be very cool.
That is cool.
Like us.
Now, if you're a person that doesn't necessarily care much for UI and eye candy, you can actually do a lot of this work with built-in tools into Windows. Windows Remote Management coupled with PowerShell, and if you really want to get uber fancy, set up SSH tunnels across different machines. You can just get, you know, command line access into all those machines to do what you need to do, which I've personally done on my friend's machines because it's, again, low overhead.
Yeah.
It's free. It works across IPv6, which I really like. I don't have to worry about port forwarding or any of that kind of stuff across routers.
Yeah.
It's all basic, and it's all fully authenticated, you know. It's me logging into their machine. I have a user account there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I need to go install updates or, you know, check out why their machine is acting funky, I can actually still log in.
Yeah.
Now, of course, all this starts to break down when you've lost network connectivity, but, you
yeah,
know, once
that.
That's happened, well, it's time to see your friends and family in person.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so the next pick of the week is Nynite, which this is an interesting one. Actually, Dan Fernandez had an idea for this and a long time ago, like years and years ago, and he always wanted to do this as a coding for fun project.
Mm-hmm.
And what this does is, you know, whenever we flatten a machine, we kind of tend to install the same little utilities over and over and stuff, you know, browsers, whatever. This kind of automates that whole process. So you can go through here and check all the different applications that you'd like to install.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do, like, you know, Skype and VLC, here's, you know, Flash, Silverlight,
ooh,
Air,
ooh.
Paint, all this stuff. After you click all these, you go to download the installer, and it will do all the, instead of like install this one, next, 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 all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
it just does it all for you. So it's very nice. It'll also do updates for you. And so I haven't used this because, you know, I got my little list, and it doesn't take me very long, but it's a great idea. And so... Yeah, it looks very nice.
I'm in the same boat as you. I have not actually tried this out because I like to actually get not necessarily released versions mm-hmm. of software when I get the new machine. Like, I'll want to try out, say, Flash Beta.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'll want to try out the latest dev branch of a particular piece of software,
mm-hmm.
which isn't always available with something like this. So...
Yeah, and the nice thing with this, too, it does stuff like it automatically says no to toolbars and all the other junk and stuff.
That's a big one, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty nice. So what's your half pick of the week?
Well, actually, the Intune was the half pick of the week.
Okay, where, all right.
So that was the Microsoft version of the Saludo,
mm-hmm.
although it's not quite where I'd want it to be. It does fill a very important gap.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between using command line tools connecting to remote machines and... the Saludo graphical interface.
We're all about options. Lots of
absolutely.
Options.
Absolutely. There's however tons you of like. Options, which is great. That's what I love about the Windows ecosystem.
Yeah.
Is there are so many ways of doing something, and you can customize it the way that you want. The thing that I would recommend, though, and this kind of goes back to my general thing about not wanting to install a lot of software, because as software has progressed over the years, they've gotten significantly more complex, and in that complexity, you don't actually know what's happening behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd recommend is before you install any piece of software, actually go check out their EULA, actually read the EULA, go check out their support forums first,
yeah.
see what kind of issues other people are having with it, if any. One of the things that I'm generally concerned with is privacy. So like whenever you're talking about, hey, set up a connection to another machine,
yeah.
you know, what intermediary server are you talking about? Like the Saludo thing is saying it registers with a back-end server.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what kind of implications does that have? I don't know, you know, where are they based? Are they based in Russia? Are they based in a country that has looser privacy laws than mm-hmm. The United States? So those are the kind of things that I tend to be concerned with, which is why I really like not having to install anything, using the built-in tools whenever possible, and, you know, getting feedback from users and giving them to the different product teams going, hey, you know, we really do need something like this built in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as much as Microsoft has given a lot of flack for not implementing certain features when users want it, we do have a lot of oversight into the features that do get put in.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of regulations. We have a lot of requirements. So one of our big ones are privacy requirements.
Yeah.
You know, we have huge privacy requirements, which is why I'm very, very confident in the software that we produce.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Which, it's not that I don't have confidence in the third-party ones, it's that I just don't know them well enough,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't know who really ever does without doing deep audits and reading the documentation.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very surprised when I came to Microsoft just how stringent our privacy stuff is. And I mean, it's like in past places that I've worked and different sites that I've worked on, people will drill down on like just web stats and stuff where we can't even get that information because a lot of it is covered by the privacy stuff. And it's like, yeah, we can't get that. And I was like, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's very, very wrapped up here. Good. One of the things that we didn't talk about, though, as far as doing backups, we talked about backing up all of our external data and stuff, but we didn't talk about backing up the actual machine, so just a Windows backup. After you get everything set,
yeah.
and you've got everything... How do they overlook that?
Oh, so yeah, well, you
get the machine done, do a Windows backup off the bat.
That one I don't even think of anymore because it constantly reminds you to set up a Windows backup.
Yeah, and then the Windows backup itself goes into my temp stuff, which goes into my thing, gets backed up, and goes in, then it's like a vicious circle.
Yeah, so. I've all my stuff, all my Windows backups go to my server box, and it just backs up over the network. My server box has a nice, big, beefy UPS on it now, so it's not even subject to power loss.
Yeah.
You know, it is so beefy. It's an APC backup. Backup power supply. It's so beefy. It can run for like a couple hours.
Nice.
And this is with a multiple RAID 5 12 terabyte array attached to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was considering drilling a little teeny hole in my safe mm-hmm. so I could actually have my hard drives that are in my safe go right into, you know, my machine. But I was like, well, if there's a fire, I wonder if that little hole would be the straw that broke the camel's back.
Probably don't want to do anything that would jeopardize the integrity of the safe.
Well, there's that, of course. Oh, well. All right. So that's the show for this week. If you have any questions, you know, leave them in the comments, or you can send us an email, defragshow@microsoft.com. And thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
Happy 2012.